Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. This week, Mina chats with Bill Barnwell about the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, as well as the firings of Doug Peterson and Brian Schottenheimer. Download and subscribe to The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, and The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Joining us on the show today, it's when we have a guest on, and this is a true story. So my brother's birthday was a couple months ago, and I was scanning through Cameo, and I was like, okay, who could I get that my brother would appreciate a cameo from? And I looked and I saw a dude and I was like, oh man, back in the day at Houston, my brother would always talk about seeing this dude out at the clubs and stuff. So I was like, yeah, let's get it on. He did a great cameo and said that he was down to come on the podcast. And the man is Vernon Maxwell. Vern, what's going on, man?
What's up, baby?
Yo, man, I'm all good, man. Like, you are in Charlotte now, right?
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yep.
How you like it out there?
Oh, I love it, man. I mean, I got my son at Georgia Tech. I got one coming up in high schools in the 9th grade. So I love Charlotte, North Carolina.
Like, how much do your kids know, like, about your career and, like, who you were in the NBA?
Well, I guess it's not hard to find. All you got to do is Google Vernon Maxwell. It pops right up in their face. So they know who their dad is and what I'm about. And they know I'm a crazy-ass person. They know they know who I am.
See, my first thought on you, because I grew up in Houston while you were playing for the Rockets. Like, I remember when they traded for you. You know, like, I remember all of that. You were the first dude that I remembered in the NBA that was shooting, like, those 30, 35-footers. Like, staying way behind the line and putting them up.
That's right. Yeah, I ain't have no conscience, man. You know, you can't play with no conscience. So when I got, you got to let it fly, man. That's what I was doing, man. I was just being me. You know, just, I mean, I just didn't know no other way to play.
Yeah, you stayed ready. Like, you were ready at Florida. You were ready with the Rockets. Like, ready seemed to be your game.
Man, I couldn't be, I don't know no other way to play, man. I mean, it's nothing to be scared for. It's nothing to be, I mean, I just love to play the game. And I just thought I was one of the best at my position. And I just love to compete. That's all.
I always wondered how you didn't wind up playing football, because you're from Gainesville, Florida, right? Like, I always wonder how they did not let somebody with your size and speed, how they did not make you play wide receiver.
I was all-state first team in Florida my senior year. I got recruited at the University of Florida, Florida State, all those Florida teams, Miami. I got recruited by all those schools. You know, I mean, I was a hell of a football player. I played defensive back and wide receiver, a punt returner, kickoff returner. I was all that. But, yeah, I played football.
Now, what was the grind for you? Because you played at Florida, and you were really good at Florida, but getting on in the NBA took you, like, a little while longer to get, like, a steady place in the league. So what was that experience like for you, that, you know, that staying on rosters, like, going to the Spurs, leaving the Spurs? Like, what was that like for you as an experience, and how sure were you that you were going to make it in the NBA?
Man, at first it was rough, man, because I was in San Antonio, and they wanted me to be somebody I just didn't feel like I was comfortable being. You know, they wanted me to be somebody else, and I couldn't be that guy. I got in a couple of things in San Antonio, you know, my first year when I was there. I like to be out partying. I like to have fun. And I got in a couple of scuffles outside of clubs, and San Antonio got tired of me, and they sent me over to Houston, and I was kind of skeptical because I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing about no trades. I didn't know nothing about, I just didn't. And they sold me to Houston for $30,000. I was like, damn, they sold me like a slave. I ain't never heard a player getting sold for 30. They sold me for $30,000 to Houston Rockets. I was like, well, damn, they really wanted to get rid of me bad. So I was like, shit. So, okay. And I got to Houston. Then I had Don Chaney was there, and Don Chaney, it was a blessing in disguise because he understood me. He was like, Max, don't worry about what happened in San Antonio. I'm going to let your ass go. I just need you to come in and play some ball, be who you are. And that's when I took off. I knew I was going to be one of these guys that people be talking about for a long time.
Now, what did you feel like San Antonio wanted you to be that wasn't you?
Man, cornball ass. I mean, I'm just saying, this is going to be a cornball ass. I couldn't be that, man. I mean, they wanted me to stay at home. I mean, I'm 23 years old. Why in the hell am I going to be staying at the house for? I'm a millionaire. What am I going to do that for? I'm going to be out in these streets. I couldn't be that guy, man. And they wanted me to be some white collar guy and change my image. And I mean, it was just totally, I just felt so uncomfortable in San Antonio, but I loved the city, and Popovich was good to me. Larry Brown was good to me. You know, all those people was good to me. I mean, and Bob Bass was my guy, but I'm just saying, I just couldn't play for them.
Well, it's funny. I was about to say that, like, you and Larry Brown seem like an interesting mix. Like, that wouldn't be one that I would think would work off top, because Larry's so worried about all the little things at all times.
Yes, Larry, it was a different relationship.
You played in Philly, right?
Yeah, I played with him in Philly, and I played with him in San Antonio. I mean, he want to run. He just want to. I mean, I love Larry Brown. Yeah, he's a great guy. I never forget him. I mean, but I just couldn't be the guy Larry wanted me to be. And I mean, I don't know how the relationship, how I got back with him again when I got to Philly. I was like, well, damn, he didn't really with me when I was in San Antonio. And damn, he going to bring me to Philly? I ain't understand it, but I went and got that money.
I guess Allen gave him some practice, right? Like after he had been dealing with Allen, I guess maybe he had a better handle on how to deal with you.
Yeah, that's my guy, man. He lives in Charlotte too, right here with me. So, I was with Allen. So, but I just didn't understand why he brought me there. But I mean, it was just crazy, man. You're right. But Larry Brown's a great guy. I love Larry Brown, and it was a strange relationship.
Yeah, and then you got to Houston. And, like, one thing I always love to ask cats that played ball in Houston, one thing that seems to be common is ball players love living in Houston, right? They absolutely love living in Houston. Like, what is it about Houston that y'all love so much, aside from the fact that your money stretches a long way?
All them Beyoncés out there. We love all them Beyoncés in Houston, Texas. That's all I mean. I'm just kidding. I love Houston. Great food, great people. I mean, it's just a lot of beautiful women. And it's just a lot of fun. I love Houston. Like we was talking about earlier, you get off on the feeder road in Houston, you got tacos and you got tacos and bad women. It's just happy hour everywhere. I love Houston.
Yo, one thing that I think that people don't get about Houston, it's a little thing, but like Houston is one of the few cities in America that doesn't have any zoning, right? So literally anything can be anywhere. Like where the strip club pops up, totally random. There's no telling where any of these things might be. It any place, something might turn up.
And that's why I love Houston, Texas. Because I was in them little holes like that there. Third Ward.
Yeah.
I was everywhere. I was all up in there. Third Ward before the game. I'm on my knees with my Ferrari. Just shooting down. Out of here in about 45 minutes, y'all. Now, y'all come on, get this money.
See, there's always one dude like that. I'm fascinated by that. The dude that plays on the team, but is actually like for real kicking it in the city. Like, you are in Third Ward shooting dice the day before the game.
Yeah, 3 hours before the game, I'm shooting dice in Third Ward. Yes, at the car wash.
Like, and I think most people look at that and they're like, how do you even wind up over there? Like, in the first place, you on the Rockets. You got some bread in your pocket.
Yes, I went straight past the summit, straight to Third Ward, and got to him right on my knees. I was gambling. 3 hours before the game, I'm out there. Yeah. Put the money down now. Put the money down. Put my money down. 3 hours before the game.
Now, like, how'd the Rockets feel about this? I imagine they were a little nervous.
They didn't really know. They kind of found out about it, but they really didn't know what I was doing. You know, I stayed in the streets. So, I mean, everybody loved me in Houston. I go anywhere in Houston. I can go literally anywhere in Houston. I mean, and not feel threatened about nothing. So I guess they kind of knew, but that's what I did, man. I was a gambling crazy fool in Third Ward.
Well, I tell you, we'll get back to your stuff, but I think one thing that is interesting about the time you were with the Rockets, and I try to tell people who don't remember this as well, you played for the Rockets before Olajuwon put the H on his name, when it was Akeem and not Hakeem. And people don't know, man, that dude was hell on wheels, man.
Now, that dude was a fool. That first one was a fool. Then when he became Muslim, he really came to, that's when everything changed up for him, himself, and our team. But Dream's a great teammate, but at first it was difficult. Whew. I mean, I got slapped out of me.
Serious?
Yeah, in Seattle, Washington. Man walked up on me and slapped out of me.
For what?
Because he said I would be disrespectful. I was spitting on the floor. What the is you talking about? Spitting on the floor? Okay, all right, man, Dream, go ahead with that. Man, I ain't want to hear that, Dream. Maxie, who you talking to, Maxie? Maxie, okay, who you talking to me, Maxie? I say, hey, Dre, man, go ahead with all this And then, so we get in the locker room. It's a long walk, not alone. Now, to tell you, from the floor from Seattle, that old ass place, you walk down there about a mile to get to the goddamn locker room. He behind me, I'm in front of him. I'm looking back behind me because I'm thinking he's getting ready to do something. So it's telling me, Maxie, you disrespectful. You disrespectful. I don't like it. I don't like it. I said, Dream, man, I ain't doing this, man. Go on. I ain't doing this tonight with you, man. We down 15 points. Let's get back in this game, man. I'm mad. That's why I'm spitting. That's what I do when I was mad. I spit a lot on the floor when I get mad. And he was trying to want to discipline me. And we walked in the line. I told him, f*** him and all that. We went in the locker room. I had my head down. And they used to always put my locker by his locker. Don't get along like that. Why did you do that anyway? I don't know why they do that. I know we both leaders on this team. But goddamn it, I ain't want to be by Dream. And I went in the locker room. I sat down. I got in there first. And he was coming in behind me. I put my head down. I'm looking like, man, I don't know how to say to me. So Dream walked over. I see some 2 feet coming in with them E-Tonics.
Yeah, I remember he had the E-Tonics.
I'd see them come between my feet. Maxie, what do you say to me? What do you say to me? Bow. Out of nowhere. I was getting ready to say, man, go ahead with that bow. Man, slap the taste out of my mouth, man. I went crazy in that. I ran everybody out of that locker room. Rudy T, everybody ran out of the police. Everybody came in that. You better calm down. I won't get somebody. Bust up glass in that. I had glass in my hand, cutting my hand up, telling me, Max, put the glass down. Man, I'm mad as hell, man. Them gonna slap at me, man.
Let me tell you, the best Dream story I ever heard. My brother knew this dude. You might even know him. E. Richardson. Eric Richardson used to play at Alabama. And E used to be in Houston around with, you know, the early days of Olajuwon. And his people didn't know. They said Olajuwon used to lead the league in text. They had the ref mess around and give Olajuwon a call he did not want. And Olajuwon look at the ref and say, suck my like that's the thing. Like, the Olajuwon that we see now is a different animal from the one that showed up in the league.
Yes. When he first got there, man, he was off the chain, man. It was rough. He was just, I guess he was trying to figure this out too, you know? Goddamn. It was tough to deal with, man. He was tough. I love him to death now, but he was tough to deal with, boy. Became Muslim, everything, man. That's when we started winning. That's when we became, you know, champions. And man, everything turned over a whole nother leaf, man. It was totally different, man. I mean, good God, man. They was right. Well, whoever said that, they said the right.
Yeah, let me tell you. It's interesting, like with you talk about like being crazy, stepping to dudes. I remember this also. You were one of the first people I ever remember seeing to step to Michael Jordan in a game. Like, there was one at Chicago Stadium where it looked like you was ready. Like, ain't nobody about to fight Mike, because that's just not really probably going to happen. But you seem to be the least afraid of dealing with Mike of anybody I could think of.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to do some that nobody never did before to these people like Mike, you know? You can't treat him like he the king. You got to, man, you, Mike. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to be different with you. I'm going to see how you do this. I'm going to see if you want to get in this fight. You want to get in this fist fight? I don't think you never had a fight in your life. You want to get this? You want this? Okay, that's what I used to do to him. So, and I used to do something that nobody else wouldn't ever do to him in Chicago Stadium and Houston. When I see him on the streets, I didn't give a damn where I wanted him. So he knew it. And Mike was a great guy, best guy I ever played against. But he ain't want to fight old Mad Max.
Nah, you would do, like, you seem to be the dude that we didn't know how this might wind up going. Like, I don't even know if you remember this. I met you at the All-Star game in 2013 at Kenny's party. I had walked in with Barkley and all them cats, and I'll never forget, you rolled up in there with a backpack on. And I remember the first thing I thought when I got in there, I was like, damn, like, what's up? I was like, yo, man, Vern's here. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, man, but now we got to keep an eye on Vern. Like now I have to keep an eye out on what might transpire because Vernon Maxwell is in the house.
That's how you felt, man.
Hey, man, look, I remembered the stories. I was just like, you know, I don't know what Vern might do up in here. And it sounds like cats didn't know what Vern might do when he showed up in the spot.
Nah, Max is chill. When I first met you in that party, too. Man, I was chill.
Oh, you were chill. You were chill, but I was just like, oh, that's Vern. Oh, damn, that's Vern. Like, it was that. See, that party was funny for me because that's when I was like really getting started in this. And I got in the back door with Charles Barkley and all the TNT dudes. But what was funny about it was my homeboy was with me and he didn't move fast enough. Like, I got halfway up the steps and I was like, damn,
he got left out.
He got in eventually. Right. But there was really nothing I could do to solve the problem after that point. And we got there, you know,
that night I was getting ready. I was going to jump on Gary Payton. That's what I came to that party to do.
What Gary Payton do?
He told all them people lies. Kenny, Charles, on TNT, Ernie. He told all of them lies. You know, like what happened in Seattle when I beat his ass. He told them people he beat my ass. I drug out of that boy.
Hold on, when did you fight Gary Payton?
In 1999, 2000. I drug that.
Hold on, this is like older, wiser, veteran Vern, and you were fighting Gary Payton in 2000?
Yeah. Me and Gary, yeah, that's what, and he, I can't, okay, let me stop, that man cost me $6 million, man.
How?
Because, man, when I jumped on him in Seattle, man, he was a franchise guy there. Him and Ben Baker was there. He was a franchise, I was just coming off the bench, and he was a franchise guy. And I had signed a 3-year, $9 million deal. And then I was in my first year of the deal. And he knocked Shimon Williams in the mouth. He bust my little young boy up. He bust his mouth wide open in practice. And him and Brent Berry was on the starting lineup. And me and Shimon was on the backup. And he bust my young boy mouth open. And when he did that, I jumped on his ass. Because he shouldn't have did that. Because young man trying to find his way in the league. Young black man trying to make it. You know, and guy was a great kid, the young kid, Shimon Williams. And that man bust that man. I mean, blood coming all out through this man. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm like, man, yo, man, what do you do that for? Boom, 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 boom. I just took off. I just started swinging. Bang, 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 bang. Grabbed him, slung, bam, slammed him. Bop, bing, bop, bing, bop, bop, bop. Beat his ass. And then they tell me, Max, you got to leave. You got to leave the facility. I'm like, man, I ain't leaving no facility. So, but to make a long story short, the man called me $6 million. He told him, don't bring me back. And they had to get rid of me. And they tried to send me to New York, but I ended up going to Dallas. And then I lost all this money, man. I lost all this money in this, man. I came there to get him. That's who I was looking for, Gary Payton.
All I'm saying is, I said when I got in there, I needed to keep my eye on Vern. You were like, damn, is that really how you felt? And now we find out I needed to keep my eye on Vern. I was right.
That's why I had the backpack on for. I'm getting ready to get right. Kenny had to talk me out of it. Kenny had to tell me, Max, please, man. Please, Max. Please, bro. Please do not fight in this party. You're going to turn my party. Please don't do it, Max. Let him make it tonight. Let him make, please. I said, okay, boy, Jet, you my I love you. Boy, you got that.
I feel like that was Kenny's job playing with you was a whole lot of, like, not right now.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, because I was fight his fights on the floor, my fights on the floor. I mean, that's like my little brother. I used to take care of Kenny. Nobody was going to touch him.
But it seemed like dudes in the league rock with you, even though you were, like, perpetually fighting with him.
No, everybody loved me. You know, everybody love old Mad Max. Man, I ain't going to do nothing, man. They know what kind of person I am, man. I'm a good guy, genuinely. If you really, really get to know me, man, you know I'm a real, real good guy down to earth. You know, always got your back type of guy.
Aside from winning the championship in 94, like, what is there any moment that jumps out to you for your time in the NBA? Like, this was my favorite moment of being a professional basketball player.
Oh, man, probably when I had 51 against Cleveland, 32 in the quarter, that one quarter against Cleveland that night. That's probably besides the championships, that's probably the most memorable thing, you know, that, you know, because it's like rare that somebody do what I did that night. I had 30 and a quarter. So it was like an out-of-body experience. You know, I didn't even know what the hell was going on when I was doing it. You know, I was making a lot of shots, though. But that was probably most besides the championships, yeah.
Yeah, and I went to championship. I always wondered this for guys who were on the floor for this, especially you, as I imagine you spent a lot of time guarding them. What was it like watching Josh Starks put up brick after brick? Because I always say Josh Starks, they never got to pay for a meal in Houston. They got him.
I just told him, you know, that's one of my favorite guys in the league. I love him. I think our game, me and John Starks, our game was pretty much like similar. You know, we tough-nosed guys. We'll beat your ass. We want to fight you, you know, and we'll take the big shot, and we'll never stop shooting. We're going to keep shooting. And I kept telling his ass that day in game 7. I was like, John, keep shooting, John. Shooting up bricks. That bitch was kidding. I said, God damn, keep shooting, John. Damn. Go on, John, shoot again. I was like, good God, oh, man. I didn't know why Pat Riley put him out and put Hubert Davis in there. I'd have tried Hubert. I mean, but goddamn, I love that what they done. They did so that was a real smart they did that day.
I tell you this though, I don't know how I would have felt about throwing Hubert out there with you though. Like, you and Hubert are two completely different people. Like, one thing about John was he was gonna keep shooting. I give him that.
That's right, that's right, that's right. Yes, he was. Yes, he was. But yeah, he would, that would have been, yeah, they'd have had some problems that put his
yeah, but y'all had, that was a wild year, because that was the year you went down 2-0 to the Suns, right? And dealing with Barkley. And Barkley did seem to be the one dude that y'all didn't like at that time.
Well, he just talked a lot of, you know what I mean? And he used to back it up, though. Barkley was a hell of a guy. But when we went down 0-2, we lost 2 20-point leads at home. The first two games. And then he talking about ain't nobody want to shoot the ball. And like that cheap-ass suit he talking about somebody had on. And he was interviewing after the game. And I was like, oh, that's how I go. And then we went down and we were going up the Phoenix, flying up the Phoenix. We was down 0-2. And I was telling everybody on the plane and setting up vacation spots and where they getting ready to go, you know, because we down 0-2 going out and just setting up vacation spots. I ain't on vacation. But I'm going out here to shoot, man. I'm finna go at this. They call us Choke City. Man, this man, Barkley and them, man. I went out there, man. I had another. That was a big game I had. I mean, I'll never forget it, man. I mean, I was proud of myself for putting on a display like that because, I mean, I had, 2 points at the half? End up with 34. So, like I said, another out-of-body experience, and I wanted to get at Barkley ass, and I wanted to turn this thing around. That's what we did, man, and we won that series, man. That was big right there.
And then the next round, you got to play against your favorite team, the Utah Jazz. Yo, when did you decide that your Twitter existence was going to be spent antagonizing the Utah Jazz?
Well, they did so much to me. They hurt my feelings out there a lot, man, when I used to go out there. They used to call me out by my name. You know, they tortured me out there, man. I said, whenever I get a platform where I can say something about the ass, I'm going to kill them. I got no internet out there. Nothing to do out there.
Like, is that the worst crowd in the NBA, like for black players in the league?
Yes, sir. Yes. Because you got to understand, there's probably 5 blacks in the stadium, the whole in the stands, 5 blacks, and they way up at the top. You know who I'm calling. All them white folk down there calling you out by your name. You, Maxwell. You. Oh, man. What? Oh, man. Oh, Lord. That's what they're doing. That's how we're doing out here with the internet. They got no internet out there, man. Them, man. Man, I'm going to stop.
But the other thing I always thought about when you playing the Jazz, too, then you out there with, like, Stockton Malone throwing on them elbows and everything else. Because I know Carl ain't really your dude like that.
The cause of defense. You know, we had the same agent, and nobody probably, me, him, Dennis Rodman, Bison Daly, Brian Williams, we all had the same agent. Yes. Carl was cool. We used to take trips in the summertime together. Our agent take us on a trip somewhere, and we all, Carl was a good guy, but on the floor, he's a dirty on the floor. Him and John Stockton, it looked like a little schoolboy. Like, he ain't, man, that dirty as hell. John Stockton was the dirtiest in the league. I said, little white boy like that, dud as hell. But yeah, I hate Utah.
I've never been there. Like, I think I passed through the airport one time. Like, I can't even say anything about the place because I've never been there.
Did you get the internet when you passed through? Could you get on there? I mean, come on, I'm just asking a question. God damn, man. Did you get on the internet? What you do? Did that work? Did it have it back then?
I think at that time, I would imagine that there was internet at the Salt Lake City airport.
Okay. I just wanted to know, man, because I know when I was in that, they had no internet.
You are relentless on them, man. Like, it never fails that when it comes up and I read it and I'm like, I can hear your voice when you say it, all of it. And I'm like, why is this always so funny every time?
Hey, man, it's just what it is, man. They killed me, man. They tortured me, man. They tortured me. So,
now, on that run, I talk about that game with Starks, but I think people forget, too. I think the last big bucket in that game was a 3 from you at the top of the key, right? Like, the one that put it over the top.
Yeah. Well, Dre, you know, he got double-teamed and came out with one of those crazy passes that he always throw to us outside at the last minute. And we have to be ready, locked and loaded to shoot it, and that's what I was doing. I was just ready to shoot it and made a big shot and to put the game out of reach for us to win that first championship. Yeah.
Now, how much fun was it being Vernon Maxwell after that first championship?
Oh, my goodness. Whew. I was going through a divorce. That's how much fun it was. I went through a divorce through the first championship, I had to talk my wife out of divorce because, man, I didn't go home for about 2 weeks. Just leave it at that.
Man, you lived a life, man. And then the next year of your career, like, that is where we had the incident in Portland. I did not ever see video of that until about a year ago. And what's interesting about watching that video is nobody was paying attention. You got up the steps. One, it was clear to me that that dude, once you got up there, understood that whatever he said was wrong, right? Like, the look on his face indicated, uh-oh, I have messed up. But the other part is the look when Robert Horry realizes, oh, no, Vern has gone into the crowd. Like, I remember one time, I feel like it was in Washington where they had to stop you from getting that lawyer dude who used to be out there screaming at people all the time on the court. But the look on Horry's face when he realized, oh, no, it's too late. It's too late. Let's just go try to get him back.
He just started walking right behind me, like, falling, make sure nobody else don't hit him upside his head, because I know he's getting ready to go up there. I told him, man, bring your ass. Come on. I went up there. I was going up there for one thing only. Talking about my stillborn daughter. That's what I was going up there to do. Slap the taste out of his mouth. That's what I done. He got that money, too. He got $300 from me.
That went for $300?
Yeah, that was $300.
Man, how'd that go over with the wife?
She just didn't go on vacation that year. Goddamn Louis Vuitton purse and all that other she was buying, so just chill out. That's all. That's what it's
That was a different NBA, too, because you only got suspended 10 games for that.
That was a different NBA then. I only got suspended for 10 games. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, then that's when they bought Clyde in on me, and they disrespected me. The Rockets disrespected me. Bought Clyde in there, and they didn't tell me what was going on. All they had to do was tell me, then I respected more, you know what I mean? Because all I did for them, I mean, I just felt the disrespectful level was disrespectful.
Yeah, I did wonder about that, because while the suspension was going on is when they made the trade for Drexler, and then what that's like then to come back. Because on one hand, it is Clyde Drexler, but on the other hand, you are you.
Right, yeah. I love Clyde Drexler. Hell of a player, hell of a competitor and all that stuff, and I know he's Houston's guy, Houston Cougars, him and Dream and all his other you know what I mean? But it's just a way to do you know what I mean? All I did was, you know, gave him everything I had, and that's what the y'all do to me. You know, just tell me what you're doing. I mean, even then while I'm suspended, just tell me what you're doing. Just call Max, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to bring Clyde in. We'll bring you off the bench, and I'd have been cool with that. Just talk to me. But they never did. And then I got back, and then they just treated me like wouldn't like Rudy's like, I couldn't play no more. Like Clyde, I used to go at Clyde. We bust Clyde in my ass at Portland. Every time we see him, I know he going right with his head down. God damn, I'm gonna send it. I mean, what the hell? I mean, come on now. I love Clyde though, but I mean, that's my guy, Clyde. You know, you my guy, but damn now, y'all gotta respect me a little bit better than that. Now, I love Clyde, but damn now, don't do me like that.
Well, how did you feel when it came to that point in the season where the Rockets asked you to leave?
Well, they didn't tell me to leave. I left. I told them I was leaving. You know what I mean? And, you know, my man Sam Cassell, he had my back, and I shouldn't have did it that way. I should have been more professional about it. And, you know what I mean? I should have stuck it out and just stay. I mean, but it is what it is, water under the bridge now. And like I talked to my son at Georgia Tech right now, my son, I don't want you to do what I did. I'm still have nightmares about that. I shouldn't have did it like that. We're not going to make irrational decisions like crazy decisions just off the dome, just make a crazy, like, I shouldn't have did it like that. I should have just went on and put my tail between my legs, and the Rockets were getting ready to pay me $25 million, you know, for 4 years, and I should have just stayed there and just, you know, and shut my goddamn mouth, and I didn't, and so, but it's all good, though, man, but that's one thing that I feel like I handled the wrong way.
Like, the reason I want to ask you about it was less about the moment then, but just kind of some perspective for you as you see what's going on now, or what just went on with James Harden getting traded from the Rockets to the Nets. And I kind of thought of you a little bit when I saw DeMarcus Cousins being like, look, man, this is not cool. This is disrespectful. And that's a dude, he's been in the league now for 10, 11 years, but that's not the dude that anybody would expect to be on the side of right in a lecture about professionalism, you know?
Yeah, I know, man. But it's a way to do things, though. But like I heard Kendrick Perkins saying the other day, it's a rule of thumb, man. You don't throw your teammates under the bus. You hear what I'm saying? You don't do that. But after when I saw that and I seen that, I said, man, there's no way you can come back from that. You know, you can't come back across that bridge after that. After you did that, they had to get rid of James. I love James Harden to death, man. I mean, that's my guy, man. I mean, it really is, man. But he shouldn't have did it like that. I mean, they was going to eventually trade him. But it's a way to do it, man. But, I mean, you can't throw your teammates under the bus like that, man. I mean, I love James Harden to death, man. But that was bad right there. That was a sad situation.
Bro, you also played with Olajuwon when Olajuwon didn't want to be there anymore. Like, I think people have forgotten about that, that Olajuwon was out, ready to go. They accused him of faking an injury. And then he asked for more help. And it was interesting because they said, no, we're not giving you any more help. And then y'all just went and won a championship.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Olajuwon, he did pretty much like the same thing. But, you know what I mean? It was a tough situation. You know what I mean? We rallied behind him still. You know, we knew he was still our guy, you know. I mean, he still went out and played hard. He didn't play like he didn't want to, like saying like James was playing like he normally plays. And Olajuwon, he went out and played hard. You know, I mean, he still played hard with us. So, I mean, I ain't have a problem with, I mean, man can do what the hell he want to do, you know, with his career. I didn't have a problem with that. As long as he come out there and compete and play hard with us. And I ain't care about him wanting to leave, but I mean, it would have hurt us if he left. But the man went out and played hard for us. I mean, so I didn't have a problem. But I mean, Harden game was totally it was different. He didn't play his normal game, and it's like he quit.
Yeah, and I imagine that you're not one of them guys that really can abide by dudes not playing hard. Like, I think he wasn't playing hard, and he was doing that on a team with two dudes I know who have no tolerance for that: John Wall and PJ Tucker. Right. Like, so like if you're there and you're watching a dude mail it in like that, how does Vernon Maxwell respond?
Well, we had a conversation. You know, I'd have went to his house and talked to him. You know, I wouldn't have did it at the facility. I'd have knocked on his door. I'd have rung his doorbell and talked to him at the house about this. You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? That's what I would have did. But I respect that guy with utmost respect, man, James Harden. Like I said, that's my young goal. That's my young guy, man. I love him to death, man. His mom's cool people and him, man. I love him, man. So I wish him all the best.
So how's that go, like, as a teammate? Because I think you guys have an appreciation just obviously for the business of the game and knowing that the game is a business. But there is a team thing also, right? Like, it's the player's relationship with management and then the player's relationship with each other. You know, and I always wonder for guys, like, how you deal with a guy when he's in a beef with somebody else, but that beef affects y'all on the team.
Well, I just shot. Yeah, when he had beef with another guy on the team, what you said?
Well, I mean, like, you got beef with the front office, right? And so you don't want to go hard for them, but you also have this obligation to the cast that's next to you.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, well, I didn't play for the front office. I just played hard because that's the only way I know how to play. I never think about, oh, I'm playing for the front office. I'm playing. No, I played for the guy next to me. You know what I mean? My teammates. And that's who I, you know, I mean, I know they had my back and I had their back. So I really didn't never think about, oh, I'm playing. I was playing for these guys right here. These 12 guys, right? These 15 guys right in this locker room. That's what I was playing for, hard for.
So how you think you're doing today's NBA?
Oh, man, I'd be all-star. Oh, man. I'd be all-star. I'd be $100 million man, all this shit. Yeah, I kill these boys these days. You can't touch nobody. I mean, I was so fast and quick. Every time, beep, foul, beep, bat, foul, going to shoot free throws. I'm shooting. Man, it'll be easy.
Yeah, see, that's the one thing that guys of your time, when you talk about playing today, the big thing y'all talk about is the fact that nobody can touch you. Like, just how different was it with the hand-checking rules versus what you see right now?
Oh, man, you get put that hand on you, I go where I want you to go. You know, and now, you know, you can knock a man hand off you and everything back in the day. But that hand check was another body on top of you. You know what I mean? It's like two guys guarding you, you know. So, I mean, it was tough to play against that hand check. But, I mean, a lot of these guys these days wouldn't be able to play back in those days because you'll get hit the mouth. You know what I mean? Like, they'll tell you, Max, don't come back. Like Buck Williams told me with Portland Trailblazers. Hey, Max, keep talking that. Don't bring your ass back down here no more tonight, okay? I was like, man, you, Buck. Who you talking to? Buck, I'm coming. I went back down and I forgot I had said that to Buck. Buck, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. My hurt now. He broke me. Oh, man. He hit me so hard. Man, my nose crooked. It's still there. Oh, man, the man broke my nose, man, and bust my face open so bad, man, I never did return to the game. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to go back out. That's the only time I ever said I didn't want to go back and compete, man, because that man tried to kill me, man.
Yeah, I feel like Buck Williams been an old man since he was 15 years old. And maybe it's just because his name is Buck Williams, right? Like, that's an old man name from jump. Like we don't make bucks no more. Like, you played with Buck Johnson. I don't know the last time that we put a buck into the NBA. But, like, I remember when he was in Portland, like, he seemed like such an old dude. And then I looked it up, and it was like, damn, he like 32. He ain't even that old.
Yeah, well, he didn't look like Teddy Pendergrass. Oh, the beard, he's as strong as hell. I don't know. I thought he was supposed to be on the field. If he had put on the helmet, he'd be an all-star.
He was going, because he was a goggles dude, too, right? Like, he was a cat out there with the goggles.
Yes, man. Yes. That man almost killed me. I'll never forget him, man. He tried to come on my IG page, man. I blocked the shit out of him, man. I ain't want nothing to do with I blocked the shit out of him. I was like, yo, you, boy, I blocked that shit. All right, I want that man almost killed me.
Well, let me ask this. Who was the player that you got up the most for? Like, when you knew that other guy was going to be over there, that got you ready to play more than anybody?
Michael Jordan. That's the guy who I look forward to playing. I wish I could have played him, like, more than two times a year. I wish we could have played them like eight times, like we do it in the West, you know, play in the West, play eight times, play a team eight times. I wish I could have played that, man. I wish I could have played it more.
Yeah, like, I imagine it's quite a challenge, but at the same time, like, I don't know if I love a challenge enough just to be out here having to guard Michael Jordan eight times a year.
Oh, yeah, that's what I wanted. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, I wanted to play against the best, man. I mean, just to see where I was and see how, yeah, I mean, my motor was and stuff like that. I know I wouldn't kill a guy on offense, but I'm going to go back at somebody on offense. If, you know, I ain't let nobody just go at me all night long. You know, I know Mike going to get 30 shots up. That night when I play against Mike, that's going to be the night. I'm going to get 28, too. I'm going to get 28 shots up tonight, too, now, because if I'm getting 33, I'm going to get 28. I can't just let this man go at me. I got to go back at him. So, Michael Jordan, yeah.
I was curious because you brought it up, like, with your time in Philly. For you, what was it like for you playing with Allen Iverson? Like, you as an older dude who had kind of been down some of the roads that he had been down, and you were, like, the older, wiser dude at that point.
Yeah, that was my guy, man. He just kept me out in the streets all night.
He kept you out, Vert. He kept you out.
Yes. Larry Brown brought me in there talking about, I want you to mentor this guy. I want you to show him how to be a professional. And I was like, damn, me? Okay. So I came in. How in the hell Vernon Maxwell gonna tell Allen Iverson what the f- to do? That man got too much money and too many friends. All I was doing is jumping in the damn limo with him. Let's go, boy, to the party. Let's go. I'm with you, boy. I'm gonna make sure ain't nobody happen. Let's go. I can't tell this man what to do. So, but yeah, man, it was that's my guy. I love Allen. He lives here in Charlotte. And
yeah, I was kicking it at the Fridays.
Man, how you know?
Everybody know about the Fridays. I was wondering, because I would have thought by that point of your career, your game would have been to tell Allen, like, yo, man, we ain't got to go to Fridays no more, right? Like, I know that was his spot, but, like, and I know this is new to you and you happy about it, but, like, we ain't got to live like this.
Yeah, that's what he wanted, man. He loved that Fridays, man. Yeah, man, that was his spot. So, yeah, how you know about that, man? Good God, you got too much information.
Hey, man, just a little research, man. Just a little research. Just a little research. So, like, after playing, man, like, what's life of Vernon Maxwell like?
Oh, after playing, man, I love golf. I'm a bicyclist. I like to ride. I ride. I got a dirt bike. It's a street R. I can ride a street R dirt bike. But that's about it. And just take care of my kids and stuff, man. Just I'm nothing. I'm simple, man. Just staying out the way.
Who you play golf with?
Man, Dale Curry, Muggsy Bowles, all these guys, man. I play with all these guys that live around here in Charlotte, man.
As somebody who plays golf, well, I don't play as much. Golf plays me more than anything else, right? How are you at maintaining your composure on the golf course? Because it gets us all.
Yeah, and so everybody be like, man, this is crazy, dude. Your demeanor is so crazy, man, because I don't say I just, good shot, man. Good shot, man. Hey, man, I don't say anything. I just keep to myself. I mean, I'm calm as hell on the golf course. I mean, everybody be like, damn, Max, is this you for real? Yeah, I'm totally different, man. You would never believe it. That's the toughest sport I ever played, man. So, but I'm totally different than when I'm playing golf. Yeah, I'm like a mouse in the house, man. You won't hear me.
Yeah, like, what's the golf game like with Muggsy? Because I feel like Muggsy, like, I'm of that age where I was young when Muggsy was playing. So, like, you know, all the kids love Muggsy Bogues because he's, like, 5'3". And people, when you small, people come up in their minds with an idea of what kind of dude you are. Except Muggsy Bogues is Tyrone from East Baltimore. I don't think a lot of people, like, realize that that is actually a dude you don't want no problems with.
A little thug. Yeah, that's what he is. I call him Salt Daddy.
Yeah, like, go make a joke with Muggsy about how short he is and see how that works out for you.
Yeah, I know. That's my guy, man. I love Muggs, man. But, you know, Muggs can hit that ball now. I mean, he ain't got a lot of room for error. You know, he can hit that golf ball. He can play. That's my guy.
See, that's the world where the short man got an advantage, man. The golf course is where the short man has an advantage, and he's little and strong, right?
A little muscle. That man's still working out just like I am. That man is strong. That's right. He's a little muscle. That's what he is.
Yeah, I mean, you and Dale posting up is interesting, too, because, like, I feel like y'all have moved to a point where your lives are probably very similar now, but at the time that y'all were both playing, I would never have imagined Vernon Maxwell and Dale Curry playing golf together.
I know, right? I know, man. That's my guy, man. He's so cool, man. He's one of my favorite, man. I mean, quiet guy, don't say a lot, but can hit that damn golf ball. Ooh.
Have you played with Steph? Because I hear Steph's a monster, too.
Yeah. Him and, I hate playing with guys like that, you know, because all they do is hit fairways and greens. I'm struggling. You know, I'm shooting that mid-80s. I can go low in that, low 80s, but these boys shooting 76s and 75, 77, 74. I'm like, good God.
Yeah, and I feel like Steph will talk to you.
Yeah, he'll talk to you.
You ain't never have to make him stop? You ain't never have to?
No, that's my little guy right there. I love little Steph. I've been knowing him ever since he was a little kid, running around here in Charlotte on the floor with his daddy playing, warming up. So, nah, that's my little guy.
Now, see, this is my thing about you athletes when y'all start talking about struggling at golf and you're like, I shoot in the low 80s. Do you know what I would give to ever shoot in the low 80s? Like, I will never, ever shoot in the low 80s, ever. And y'all be like, yeah, I'm out here struggling at these low 80s.
Yeah, man. That's what it is, man. I'm trying to get better, man. My short game, I just got to work a little bit more to get in the single digits, man, handicap. But I'm getting there. I'm working on that short game.
Yeah, the short game. Like, that's the thing. My problem is my short game in golf has always been good. It just takes me so damn long to get there. Like, I'm serious. Like, if I could get there, I'm all right on the putts. Like, I get there. It just takes, and by the time I get there, I'm tired.
Yeah, you can chip it in there tight and all that. But when you get there, though, you got to get there, huh?
Yeah, like, I go look at the clubs that got the most wear on them with me, and it's like, ones that just implies, like, damn, I got to get this wood out again, right? It's just taking me too long to wind up getting to where I want to get.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, man, so what is out here that, is there anything left out here that you, like, really want to do that you haven't done yet that just, like, you want to get done?
What I want to do is shooting coach or something with the Rockets organization, or I want to be a commentator with the Rockets organization. I want to be that guy. I want Bill's job.
I got to say, while I'm thinking about this, three dudes that I don't think nobody wants no problems with at one time would be the combination of you, Mario Elie, and Calvin Murphy. People who are not of the right age don't understand this about Calvin Murphy.
Oh, my goodness. A killer. Ready to fight wherever he at right now. Wherever he's standing at right now, he ready to fight somebody.
He's what, like 5'9"?
Yes, a killer. Strong.
Now, this is what I don't remember. Was he wearing those crazy suits back in the day, or did he just start that later?
Oh, no, he been wearing them colorful suits, them alligator suits and all that shit, all them snake skins. And he been doing all that shit. Calvin Murphy, nobody can outdress him.
No, people don't know this. Calvin Murphy, 5'9", golden gloves boxer. Like, it, in his time in the NBA, was maybe the scariest dude in the league.
And the hula hoop.
Yeah, the baton twirler. He's a baton twirler.
Man, that man, he had a lot of hidden talents, man. Nobody didn't know.
Yeah, you know what? Go clown him about that baton twirler. Let me know how that works out.
You get your back dirty.
Elie was a similar case. Like, Elie wasn't, like, quite as out front with you about it, but Elie was a dude that just had a consistent, y'all know I'm here now, right? Like you two together, and now your team does not have a toughness problem.
Right, yeah, he's just so, like, he looked like he's just so serious all the time. You know, that's where he used to look. But he was an old teddy bear. He was a nice guy. He looked like he wanted to kill somebody out there, man. But that man was a teddy bear, man. That's my guy, man, old Mario, man. I love that guy.
Now, what's your relationship now with the Rockets?
I still do stuff, you know, with the COVID and stuff like that. I mean, I normally do a lot of stuff, but this year's, I mean, 2020 has been a crazy year, and nobody's been in the stands and no fans. And I mean, there's just not nothing to do. They're really not working in the office now with the Rockets, but I still do stuff with the Rockets. So I'm still a part of the Rockets. That's my city and that's my squad. So I still do a little stuff with the Rockets still now today.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, because we talked about a lot of these things, but I'm just curious. Is there one situation, like particularly from your time in the league? Now, you have to understand, the first introduction I got to you was my brother, who's closer to your age, talk about the time that you stole off of Alec Kessler and then ran off the floor when you were in college. Like, nobody, there was no, what are we going to do next? You stole off of Alec Kessler and ran off.
Damn, bro, remember that, man?
If I say your name to him right now, he'll be like, dog, he just hit him in the face and you just left. Like, he just disappeared. Like, nobody saw him. Was there anybody, though, that made you have to be like, nah, I think I'm going to walk away from this one?
Bug, I'm scared of him. Oh, Lord, that man tried to come on my page, man. I can't book. I can't block you.
You had to block Buck Williams on Instagram because he bullied you in the face 30 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. I still hurt. Buck Williams, man. Yes, him. I don't deal with that dude, man. Probably a nice guy, but I don't even know this cat, man. But don't want to know this either.
Now, let me ask you that. I mentioned this because I had known that your son was playing at Georgia Tech. What were the driveway games like with you and your son?
I got a bad right knee, so he started dragging me when he was a senior and a junior. He started beating my ass pretty good when he was a senior and a junior, my son Tristan. But before that, I was handing it to his little ass. Old pretty little ass, white mixed ass. I'm going to give it to you. That's what I tell you, little white ass pretty boy. Come here. I'm going to give it to you. That's what I said. So he's getting mad as hell. So that's what I... He used to beat my ass back when he's got in 11th and 12th grade. That's when he used to really come on here, bring your old ass out here. Yeah, so, but he's a killer though. He's coming up. Watch him this weekend. Hey, y'all stay tuned. Saturday, North Carolina State against Georgia Tech. Tristan Maxwell, number 11. Stay tuned.
Now, how hard were the fouls though? Like when he started getting closer and closer to you, how long did you stave off?
Yeah, that's what, you know, I have that running in the house, calling, telling his mom, hey, I done damn near ran him into the cement. I get them flagrant fouls on his ass. He, all that, you know, they, you know, all his boys gonna do all that crossover and all that. They gonna shoot it and get me in the air. I'm gonna come back behind you. I'm gonna knock the at you. That way I said, foul him hard. He go in the house crying to his mammy and all this stuff. So, but yeah, he's a tough little red boy now. Yeah, it was, he old tough little old mixed.
Yo, man, Vernon Maxwell, tell the people about your IG Live, where they can find you.
Y'all can find me at Vernon Maxwell on my IG Live. Come on, stay tuned and get on my Cameo, too.
Yo, and I can tell you, Vern came through on the Cameo. Like, your Cameo was strong. I can give a strong 5-star review about your Cameo.
Thank you. Thank you. That's right. Thank you. Hey, find Mad Max on my IG. Follow me, Twitter. Hey, don't forget Mad Max Twitter. Now, it's the best Twitter page ever.
Was it Vernon Maxwell 11?
There it is, Vernon Maxwell 11. All right.
This actually reminded me, and I hate doing this all the time. I remember, I got this crazy memory about this stuff, but I do remember, did you used to roll around Houston in a Porsche with VM11 plates on it? You know why I remember that, right? Because they put that damn car on the news that time that you got mad at somebody in traffic.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. They lied. Them white folk lied on me, man. That wasn't me in that car.
Oh, it wasn't?
No, man. We went over, man. We left. I want to say this. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I was in my Porsche, and I didn't drive my Porsche from the stadium to Luby's. We was going to Luby's to eat. The game day, we went to Luby's to eat, and I didn't drive my Porsche. I had one of my homeboys in my Porsche. He drove it. I was in another car doing something else I wasn't supposed to be doing. You hear me? I was riding with somebody else. I was in another car doing something with somebody else that I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know? So, and then my man got in an altercation with somebody on the highway, and he rolled down my window and pointed a gun at somebody, my gun. And then when I got to Luby's, I'm wondering why all the damn cops pulling up at the damn Luba's in the Luba's damn parking lot. I'm in here eating all my table full of friends and I'm like, what the f- is going on? So then I walk out of Louvre's. I'm like, this f- want my autograph? What the f- is they doing? So I jumped in my Porsche and I got tucked out and I got to the light. It's like four police cars right behind me. They all come out of Louvre's. And then when I got to the light and I got to the stoplight with the four cop cars in the middle of the street, I'm getting ready to get on the damn highway to go home and get rest before the gang. And they talking about, you got a gun in the car? I was like, yes, I got a gun in the car.
It's Texas.
It's Texas. Oh, we got you waved the gun at. What are you talking about? Oh, you're under arrest. You got a gun and and all this. And the chief of police at the time gave me that gun. Because I used to get him. I had him with season tickets at the Rockets.
Was that Lee?
Yes. That gave me the gun. Y'all going to take me in? Tell him to take me in then. But it wasn't me with the gun in that car. I got arrested for my gun because my friend waved a gun at somebody in traffic. And because I guess they cut him off or something. I don't know why they did that dumbass. And that's why I got locked up. And they let me out 45 minutes before the game, out of jail, 45 minutes before the game. And actually, we was playing against Clyde Drexler and them. And Portland Trailblazers, we was down 10 points at the half. I came in and bust their ass. And we ended up winning the game. And so, another story.
That gives me two thoughts. Number one, I love the idea that on a game day that you would just go to Luby's to go get a plate. And for people who are not from Houston, like if you're from Atlanta, that's like going to Piccadilly's before the game, whatever your local cafeteria is. Virgin's posted up at the Luby's before the game. And number two, that means that you have the second best I got arrested before a game in Houston story following James Worthy, who will always be the king of I got arrested before a game.
And in the Stouffer Hotel, they got him with the call girl.
Yeah, yeah, that was a little it balled.
And he came in and bust our ass at the half. He ran the Superman at the half. He had a cape on.
Yo, that's his Hall of Fame performance. I think that was the year, it was after Magic retired and they didn't really have a squad. James came in at halftime and balled.
So we were beating their ass too. And James came in and turned that whole game around. I said, boy, this we ain't got no conscience. Come straight out the jailhouse and bust the ass. You know, this ain't got no conscience.
Hey, man, that's Vernon Maxwell. Check him out, Twitter, IG, Vernon Maxwell 11. Definitely check out his IG live. And, man, I have had so much fun doing this. Next time I'm in Charlotte, I got to come check you out, man.
Got to take you somewhere, baby. I'm going to take you somewhere like Luby's.
Hey, man, I'm down. Hey, I mean, I still kick it a little bit the same, too.
Appreciate you.
Hey, man, thank you so much, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassan, Tarika Foster, Christina Buswell handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.